set theory in mathematics. There is a set that includes all other sets and itself as well. Another way is, Plato mentions it several times, one comes to the thing in itself by the science of all sciences that knows all things, including itself. She associated some way with dialectic. Sometimes the thing in itself is simplified to knowing a thing in and for and through itself without comparison or without any contrast or anything like that. It is a self-evident kind of experience. And another definition of the thing in itself is self-knowledge. Within what one is, outside and within oneself, all at the same time. I don't know quite how to say that. The idea of a thing in itself is, when you hear the word thing, you think in terms of a noun, you think of something that is static. But the thing that is a thing in itself is both active and passive. That is, it has a form and it has an state of being. And another thing about it is that it is to its kind. It is a representation or a representative of itself. It expresses itself. It reproduces itself or relives itself. And it's constantly self-created. So this is understanding a form of unity, oneness, or thingness of such a nature. Now, when we're talking about a thing in itself, we're not talking about an ordinary thing. We're talking about something that is a epitomization. And like many other things, epitomization, we mandalize. By doing that, we get an understanding of the character of an epitome. For example, the epitome of an Aries is a champion, someone who is a representative and an assertive, active representative. On the other hand, a negative epitome of Aries would be somebody who's a jerk or a chump or somebody like that. Taurus would be literally a thing, the epitome of a thing. It would be a collector's item, and it would be a perfect representation of something. It would be the realization of it. Or it can be an empty thing, like any random stone or something like that. Passing on to some of the other signs, Sagittarius, it would be a principle of principles. Ultimate ideal, or in the negative, it would be some kind of a vagary. And in Capricorn, we find the epitome of an epitome. It means the height of individual accomplishment, a most concentrated state or form that has nothing accidental to it all. In the negative, in Capricorn, you would see the thing in itself as a caricature of itself. Aquarius, which is what we're trying to get, it would be like a living utopia that would itself be a living essence. And so it is something that is very simple life, essential life. In short, get at is a special, crucial thing state, a place where form and life meet. And in Aquarius, that would be where Saturn and Uranus meet. It is where essence and accident meet, like the classical original. It's a place where life and form meet in reality. Now, as we can see, the idea of a thing in itself is probably the entire creation itself. But at the center of the creation, not in a sports rare state, but at the center of creation, there is also a thing in itself. And this is found in the world of thought. More specifically, it is found in the central region of the world of thought, which is called the region of archetypes. Another name for one kind of thing in itself is an archetype. And probably when you're talking about that, you're talking about the archetype of all archetypes, the archetype of being, manifest being, or the archetype of the mind that creates in being. Now, when we use the word archetype, we're not using it in the Jungian sense. Unfortunately, Carl Jung chose the wrong word and muddied the waters in so doing. You can learn a lot about archetypal thinking from Jung, but it isn't a creative archetype. Carl Jung's archetypes are much more like Platonic ideas or Platonic forms in a higher sense. Talking about archetypes, we're not talking about merely an idea. We're actually talking about something that lives and something that creates from itself. The archetype is a thought that lives itself out. For example, one of the most famous persons reading in the archetypes was Mozart. He would read in the world, he had what is called tonal vision, which is vision in the world of thought, which is actually more like hearing than like vision. But if you hear an archetype, which lasts, it sings itself continuously, it lasts for many thousands of years, and it creates from itself while singing itself. Mozart used to look at an archetype and he would have an entire symphony come to him in a fraction of a second. Of course, you have to delineate it because everything in this world is delineated, whereas in the world of thought, it is like the thing in itself. It's all one thing. And so, talking about active, living, minimal forms that are both ideal forms, and you can think of them as models, sort of like prototypes, and they represent the epitomized from which everything else is a deviation or a variation on a central or perfect theme. On the other hand, as a form, they provide the materials of creation, and they're capable of combining and compounding on themselves. All of this sounds like terribly magical things, and we're talking about something that is beyond the comprehension of most people, the speaker included. Archetypes actually have active life. That is, they speak themselves. From themselves, and they have in their life, they have a morphological evolution, so they're constantly changing. Nothing that is in any of the manifest realms, not a physical form, not vital life, not emotion and desire, and not even other thought forms can exist without there having been an archetypal thought form precedent to its manifestation. Everything from a stone to a continent has a thought form behind it. Everything from a civilization has a thought form. Everything from an atom to an entire human being and entire human life has an archetypal thought form. All beings that think precipitate archetypes. This means every being from God, through the gods, and right to humans produce archetypes. Obviously, some archetypes are more archetypal and more perfect than others. Some of the most important archetypes are the primordial atom, which is the entire plan of the entire creation. It's called the creative scheme. And the archetype of archetypes, which is the archetype that is, again, it's all things including itself. It is what is capable of producing a mind that is capable of producing thought. That is creation compounded on itself. That is a very marvelous state of being. Each of us, before we come to rebirth, have created an archetype of our life. So our lives, there is a thought form. We can study that thought form just as we would study a complex geometric figure. There is actually thought form for all, or the archetypal human being. It has a name, or it has a couple of names. It's called the Adam Primus, or it's called the Adam Kadmon. If you're familiar with it in the East, it's called Swayambhuv. If you like those kinds of terms, it is the human state of a thing in itself. We're all living, but in essence, the thought of everything that we are and the re-experiencing of it through memory is part of the archetype of our life. So all of us have a form to our life, a thought form that is a thing in itself. And if in our personality we try to live out of character and try to deviate from that, we do nothing but produce problems. We can have faults in the archetype, which manifest as illnesses or misconceptions of things, but living out of character totally is a much more dangerous thing. Now, if we partially vandalize it, the thought form of humanity, and Adam Primus, so to speak, and the human archetype, we would see it would have to have the quality of leadership. You might say that Adam was the original leader. Of course, it would also have to have the Capricornian quality of perfect execution. So what we're talking about is when the Saturnine principle comes in, centering comes in. Saturn is a seed principle where everything is concentrated. And the seed archetype for humanity is something like the seed crystal of the phenomenon that is called supersaturation. That there are some compounds that you could put them into solution and you keep adding more. That you keep adding more with temperature and you get more than the water can actually hold. But it's in a, it's not really an ionic state, is it? Yes, it is. It's a suspension. And then what happens is as it cools down, it'll stay in suspension, but you drop one crystal in it and everything that is in excess of the limit of suspension forms around that seed crystal. We're trying to get at something in there's more to it than just leadership and execution. Since we are created in the image of the universal spirit, we are spiritual beings, and the image of the universal spirit has to be also an archetype that is not really dissimilar from the archetype of a perfect human being. We're not talking about a human being this kind of form anymore. We're talking about the capacity of what a human being can become. It's the archetype of all of humanity. Our entire life wave, as we've gone through the various different stages, mineral, plant, and animal, before becoming human. And it is a human archetype. Now, within this archetype of humanity, there is the potential in truly living it out and thinking it out with exceptional activity to actually live into the future of it. Because the more deeply we penetrate into the heart of our being, our individual being and our collective being as humanity, we can advance in that archetype. And so we can see or live out what the future is going to be. And the progressive living the archetype of humanity archetype is called initiation. And so what we're talking about is an initiation into getting at the central elements of what a human being is and is becoming, and unfolding them from their very heart. So what this is a living out of the divine intention of the archetype for all of humanity as it has been, is now, and is going to be. So it is an attunement to divinity that is concentrated in the forms through which we evolve. Now, what happens is that in someone, especially someone who is highly initiated, one can live out in consciousness and simulate in creative potency all of the things that we are eventually going to be. Now, this is done through a series of steps, and this series of steps are exactly like the stages in the evolutionary creation. The epochs and the revolutions of consciousness and the different globes and periods of time in our consciousness, we're a product of it. We're made of it, so we live it out. The mysteries as foci of the different critical points in the evolution of consciousness are divided into two halves, or two parts, not halves. There are the lesser mysteries. And in the lesser mysteries, one lives out everything that a human will be as a human being. In the greater mysteries, one lives out everything that one will be as a divine being. So they represent a much greater leap in consciousness.